I mean, what's pro football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We are live. That's right. Championship weekend live here on YouTube right after the games. We just saw another crazy finish here, Sam. The Kansas City Chiefs are off to the Super Bowl. They'll be playing the Philadelphia Eagles. It's the Kelce Bowl. So we're going to break it all down here. We appreciate everybody tuning in live. Tell your friends it's happening right now, not Monday morning at 7 a.m. We're coming at you live right now after the games.
Mm-hmm.
You excited?
True.
Fired up?
Yeah, like they were. I mean, I think we have a fantastic Super Bowl now. We got the two number one seeds going after each other. We got the Kelce Bowl. That game should be pretty spectacular.
All right, let's do what we did last week. We'll start in reverse order with the thing that we just saw.
Of course.
The Kansas City Chiefs 23, Cincinnati Bengals 20. Working backwards here, the last thing that we saw, the game-winning field goal, of course, by Harrison Butker. But how did we get there? We had the Chiefs with a huge stop against the Bengals. Bengals, they had the opportunity with about 2:30 left to drive down, get the game-winning field goal. Chiefs make a stop, highlighted by Chris Jones, who had a monster game with the sack on third down. They punt it, get a big punt return from Sky Moore. And then we see Patrick Mahomes on one leg scramble for a first down, which would have been cool. You know, it was a good play. Would have kept the drive alive. There would have been 8 seconds left. There would have been a 57-yard field goal on the table and some strategy to discuss. But Joseph Asai hits him late. 15-yard penalty. It was the right call, man. It wasn't.
Yeah.
They had to make that call, but that is what puts the Chiefs into field goal range for the game winner.
Yeah, like, look, there were plenty of calls and officiating incidents in this game that you can, I think, complain about or debate or talk about. This one was bad. It was blatant. I mean, not bad, a bad call, a bad play that had to be called. I mean, he shoved him like a full yard out of bounds. He's almost over the white line that in the, you know, the sideline of the white line, which is like a yard wide in itself. He's almost all the way over that before Asai gets to him and shoves him in the back. And I mean, I kind of feel sorry for Asai because he was having a great game, was making a really positive impact throughout the course of it. But that is one of the dumbest penalties you're going to see. And that turned what was a long field goal attempt, like high 50s in that weather is a pretty brutal kick, to what it ended up being a 47-yard shot, which ultimately sailed straight down the middle. I mean, that's tough. Like, it's funny because in one way, like a play in the first quarter is the same as a play in the fourth quarter, but it doesn't work that way because of time, right? You run the further into the game you get, the less time there is to recover from mistakes. So these plays end up becoming compoundly more important when you screw them up. And if you screw them up literally with seconds remaining in the clock, there's no coming back from that. That is literally the mistake that changes that from being potentially going overtime to, oh crap, we just lost because I did something dumb.
Yeah, it was not good. You're right. I mean, there's no coming back from that, right? I mean, it puts the Chiefs into field goal range. All you got after that was they go right out there, kick the field goal with 8 seconds left. All the Bengals had was a desperation opportunity with 3 seconds left to try to lateral it. That falls flat. So Chiefs are off to the Super Bowl. What, third time in 4 years now? Third time in 5 years? 4 years? Whatever it is. They've been there. They won it in 2019. They lost in 2020. Yeah, third time in 4 years. So we got the Kelce Bowl, and as you mentioned, the two number one seeds. What a great game, though. So there was definitely some weird officiating stuff. I don't want to harp on that too much because it was a really good back-and-forth game. But you definitely saw stuff like a 3rd and 9 where we just called a do-over. Mm. Just a do-over. Bengals stopped the Chiefs on third down. We're just like, no, do it over. A do-over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really fun. Mm. Really good stuff.
Yeah, that was weird.
So there's always some officiating stuff to discuss. But like high level here, when you're looking at this game, we talked a ton about Patrick Mahomes and his ankle injury And it definitely like showed up at times, but he was way more – I mean, it didn't affect him nearly as much as I think we thought it would. I mean, what did you think of Mahomes, the ankle, and the whole week, you know, coming out playing
injured? Yeah, I mean, I think certainly early in the game, it would have been pretty difficult to tell that Mahomes was injured if you didn't know. Like, there wasn't a ton of evidence early that he was dealing with anything. I think as the game wore on, it started to become more and more obvious that he was dealing with something. And I don't know if that was a case of, like, the longer you're playing on something like that, the more it shows up, whether it's a case of, like, he claimed that he didn't take a shot of any kind before the game. I have no reason to doubt him, but maybe should have. Like, maybe had he taken a shot later in the game, it might have been less problematic. Also, as the game wore on, like, he sort of made a couple of movements that clearly aggravated it. You know, there was one where he was rolling out to his left, and he did the sort of patented Mahomes, you know, twist around the body, fire the ball back across into the middle of the field. Only this time, like, that clearly did not sit well with the leg, and he was sort of hopping his way at the end of that play. You know, from that point on, maybe that makes it even worse. But I think when you consider the spectrum of what this could have been, like, before the game, we're talking about this is usually a 4 to 6 week injury for people. When that is your sort of baseline or your context, for him to go out there and have the kind of game that he did, I think was really impressive.
It was. I mean, early on, it looked like Mahomes was just going to say, okay, I'm going to win from the pocket. We're going to be patient, take the underneath stuff. And it was working. You know, it worked pretty well early on. There was something like 108 to nothing yard differential in the first quarter. But let's start at the end again. To get to this point here, I love you. You laugh at me every time I say that.
Well, we're starting from the last game first, and now we're starting at the end of the last game to go backwards.
That's how they do it in the newspapers, right? You work your way backwards to the beginning. We could talk about it any way you want. But I thought Zach Taylor was pushing a lot of the right buttons in this one, right? He declines a penalty to go from 3rd and 22 to 4th and 8. The Chiefs punt, and that was part of what gave the Bengals their opportunity. Punting on 4th and 8, put them at the 5-yard line to try to execute a game-winning drive. The Bengals convert a big 3rd and long, but the Chiefs got the stop in the end. I mean, it doesn't matter what part of the game we're talking about. The Bengals offensive line that worked pretty well last week in the snow against Buffalo was not good in this game.
No.
Joe Burrow, under constant pressure, he was sacked 4 times on his first 9 dropbacks.
3 consecutive snaps.
Yes. It was just nonstop. Nonstop domination. Chris Jones. And the fascinating thing about Chris Jones, and that what ended up being the game, not game ceiling sack, but the one that gave the Chiefs the opportunity to win it, was against right tackle Hakeem Adeniji. They saved that, right? We've seen that at other times during the Chiefs season where they saved Chris Jones, put him outside against the right tackle, take advantage of that. But the Chiefs did a great job up front, and the Bengals offensive line just could not pass block today.
Yeah, Jones was winning consistently all the way through the game. Obviously, when he was one-on-one with guys like Sharping or Volson, he was just destroying them. As you said, they kicked him out. He was able to beat Adeniji around the edge as an edge rusher. But also, he was splitting double teams as well. So even the stuff we talked about in terms of, you know, you can take away one guy if that's all you have to worry about. Well, he was beating the double team on those kinds of things. Plus, they were actually getting home with other guys. Like, you know, George Karlaftis, who hasn't really made – he's got a reasonable number of sacks and a reasonable number of pressures this year as his rookie season. But when you go through his tape, there's almost nothing in the way of, like, impactful, clean, decisive wins. I mean, he was beating Adeniji reasonably easily, reasonably quickly. They were getting pressure. Like, Buffalo's defensive line kind of has to be watching this game and thinking, man, how bad were we? Like, we couldn't do anything against this group. Okay, we got a little bit of joy, but, like, and sure, you can blame the footing and the snow, but it didn't slow down Trey Hendrickson or the rest of the Bengals' defensive line. Like, Buffalo's defensive front has to be looking at this and going, wow, we really let an opportunity go.
Man, it was such a fun back and forth game because, you know, one of the things that kind of let the Bengals back into the game, you know, the Chiefs come up with an incredible touchdown, Mahomes to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who, by the way, just went off in this game. The Marquez Valdes-Scantling game, 6 catches, 116 yards. Mahomes throws a laser beam for a touchdown to him. They go up 7. Bengals come back and don't score. And, you know, the Chiefs have opportunities to put this game away, and Patrick Mahomes throws the ball backwards, just slips out of his hand, throws the ball backwards. The Bengals recover, and that puts them in position to get back on track. and to score. They convert. By the way, this whole day, man, team scoring with fourth down aggressiveness. Not to, like, you know, beat that drum too much, but our friend Nick Wright mentioned about, hey, we gotta highlight, you gotta highlight the wins, right? Mm. If you want people to stop saying take the points and, you know, why are you going forward on fourth down, you gotta highlight the wins.
Yep.
And there was so many wins. Like, the Chiefs scored a touchdown because they went forward on fourth and inches. There was a ton in the Eagles game, but the Bengals go forward on fourth and six, just at the edge of field goal range, chuck it up to Jamar Chase for a first down conversion. That leads to a touchdown. There were so many aggressive fourth down calls in this game, in both games today, that directly led to touchdowns, that led to points, that ended up being the difference in both games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the play as well for Kansas City's fourth down was incredible, because it's fourth, and it was a long one. You know, there's like, is it fourth and inches? Is it fourth? Like, it was fourth and a serious 1 yard, like more than a yard. Fourth and a yard and a foot, maybe. And they get Mahomes moving on what was almost like a sprint right option type of play. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. They've got it covered. And then, again, him and Kelce just adjust on the fly. He throws like a back shoulder corner, essentially, like stops the corner route and sends him back inside. And at that point, there's no way. I think Jesse Bates was the DB, but there's no way he can adjust to that. And on what is a fourth and one call, they end up scoring a touchdown on a pretty deep strike. They made those plays in this game.
They did. They
and
absolutely
like,
did.
I think both defenses did a really good job. Like, we, all the talk, I think, has been about the offenses before the game. It's been, if Burrow beats Mahomes, you know, he's the best quarterback. It's Mahomes and his ankle. It's Kelce. It's the offensive lines. Can they run the ball? Both of these defenses, I think, did really good jobs of slowing down both teams. Like, Joe Burrow almost threw a pick on the first drive, right? He then ends up, like, throwing an interception that gets negated because of a correct defensive pass interference call. He got there too early. But, like, this entire game was just sort of small, you know, tiny defensive plays either side of good or bad. You know what I mean? Like, even that defensive pass interference, it was the right call, but he flew in there so fast, and it kind of needed slow-mo to slow it down and go, oh, yeah, he was there early.
Yeah.
But he was right. Like, that's a split-second play. And then the pass interference from Mike Hilton, was it, where he had the arm around the hip, and they're debating, is that enough of a turn to call it pass interference? Like, the entire game, everything was just right on this razor's edge the whole way.
The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home? Planning to start a family? Wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Coming to you live from Western and Southern Studio here in Cincinnati. It's going to be a sad city. Over here, it won't be lit up orange here during the next couple weeks heading into the Super Bowl.
No, probably still tonight, though, you know?
Maybe
we're
tonight.
Not going to go like the Empire State Building and throw it up red.
Is the Empire State Building going to go red for the Chiefs here?
Well, they went green for the Eagles.
Yeah. They lost a bet or something.
Is that what it was?
I think. I know that was, somebody was theorizing that. I just want to echo your statements. I thought that the Chiefs defense, and both defenses were really good, I think. The Chiefs defense in particular, if you think about every big play that the Bengals had, Jamar Chase on fourth and six, T. Higgins touchdown on third and long, it's a lot of tight coverage, right?
Yeah.
The Chiefs did choose, right? If you go back through this, the trilogy initially of Bengals-Chiefs, there are these man coverage plays that we talked about that Chiefs fans are like still, oh, we played man coverage on third and 27. Yeah, well, like Joe Burrow had to like hit an absolute dime. Like they call it a dime because he had to hit this tiny spot, and he did it on third and 27. It was a tight window throw. Then they started playing more zone. Burrow picked them apart. I don't know the exact breakdown in the game today, but there was definitely a lot more man coverage and just tight window throws that Burrow and the Bengals offense, along with, you know, the pressure up front. I thought the Chiefs defense did a really nice job.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that stood out for this game is, like, the Bengals could have been out of this early. I mean, they were getting their ass kicked for the first half of this game, really. And then all of a sudden they get one drive before halftime, and you're like, wow, they're only getting out of this down seven. And they could have been out of it, you know, down even less than that. Like, they had to settle. But
yeah, it was 6-0 with two field goals. They made two red zone stops to force field goals.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Kansas City was absolutely dominating in the first half, but that's not new in this Cincinnati Kansas City dynamic. Like those three games, the last championship game, they were down 14 or something at the half, 17, so down big. In one of the other games, they were down at the half as well by double digits. The other one, they were up at the half, but they were down in at the end of the third quarter significantly as well. So the Bengals have been trailing against Kansas City in some pretty ugly spots basically every one of these games, but they come back. Like that's, I think, the thing that Joe Burrow definitely exhibits is they're not bothered by, you know, being in a hole. They're fine. They know that they have that. That's where I think he has that Tom Brady ability of, that's all right. Like, there's plenty of time left. We can come back from this. This is not, you know, we've been causing this as much as the opposition. We just keep chipping away, and we get a couple more drives, and we're back in it. Particularly, I think, with the way their defense is playing. But that's exactly what happened. They got the drive before halftime. They got themselves together after halftime, and all of a sudden, this ends up getting back to being like an absolute knife edge.
That's why I think the Bengals coaching staff has done a good job, man. I think they deserve a lot of credit. Not so much whatever. I'm not even talking about like the specific tactical stuff that we break down here all the time, but they bring it in big games, the Bengals. Zach Taylor, it sounded like he was livid for many reasons, not only the do-over on third and nine, but blocks in the back on that punt return that set up the game-winning drive. I mean, those are game changers. When the team only has one timeout, those are absolute game changers. I thought this thing was going to overtime. I think we were robbed of overtime, to be honest, between maybe missed calls, but more specifically, it's tough to see the game end on a late hit out of bounds. Right call, refs didn't do anything wrong on that particular one, but tough to see it end that way. But you're right. I think Burrow, he is cool under pressure, man, just like Mahomes is cool under pressure, right? I mean,
say that despite him throwing, you know, multiple interceptions.
Yeah, I think that, but like even those interceptions, there's a cross between like the whole timeline's like, oh, that's as good as a punt. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, a conversion on third and three is also better than a punt, right?
Yes.
But, you know, like the second one that he threw to T. Higgins, you know, it's a throw up there to let him go make a play that shouldn't have been picked. It was just, you know, gets tipped away and bounces up for a pick. It's an aggressive play call. I mean, that's part of, I believe, why people rally around Joe Burrow. He had a great scramble. They converted the third and long just before he got sacked on that last drive. But, you know, the Bengals believe that they can win all these games. There's something to that, just like the Chiefs believe, right? After Mahomes has, you know, if we look back at that game and say he throws the ball backwards, basically, unprompted, fumble, you start looking at last year's AFC Championship in the second half where he's fumbling and taking sacks and, you know, making uncharacteristic plays as they blew the lead. They didn't completely implode this time. It was one random play. Mahomes bounces back. And then on top of that, the Chiefs had all of their receivers hurt too. Like the totality of what the Chiefs were dealing with the offense, with Mecole Hardman and Kadarius Toney, Juju Smith-Schuster, all of those guys hurt. Travis Kelce was a kind of a game-time decision. He looked like he's still got those back spasms, and Mahomes has the ankle, and didn't matter. You know, just greatness coming through and you know, when they needed it.
I mean, when you kind of tot up the totality of what they were dealing with from an injury perspective, just this game, I mean – Kelce was supposedly a game time decision, which, I mean, if you listen to him, he was like, I was always playing, but they needed to see me warm up before they were going to okay it. So whatever. But all of a sudden it's like Kelce might not play in this game. Mahomes, we know, was dealing with the ankle, which was a major thing. Kadarius Toney catches one pass after almost catching a touchdown. It coming out on review, coming out once they saw it. Basically tries to juke and then ends up popping an ankle or something, so he's done. Juju goes down with a knee injury. Like they were completely out of receivers by the end of this game. They had like two guys that were running multiple tight end sets as well. The Bengals dealt with their own injuries, but that's a lot to be missing from this offense and for it still to function and be okay.
Yeah, you know, having Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a couple big plays in there from him, including the touchdown. I mean, he was even the guy Mahomes was throwing to, you know, against the blitz.
Yeah.
And, you know, the question coming in was, could the Bengals get pressure on Mahomes? And early on, they didn't really. They did try to blitz and got to him a little bit. I don't know the exact numbers right away till we review the game. But there were definitely times, too, where it felt like the Chiefs' offensive line, like you mentioned the play where Mahomes tweaked the ankle a little bit. It's almost like the Chiefs are like, what? Patrick's hurt? let's step up our game. And all of a sudden, the pockets are just better. And they just – I could have been wrong.
Really?
Believe it or not.
Hmm.
On the Chiefs building their offensive line. And that being the strategy going forward.
You hated that.
I did, because I thought that they would get to a situation like this where the on-paper group of playmakers wasn't good enough. And I may have been wrong on that. Because I think the line has given them a little bit more flexibility where they can run the ball. I mean, they couldn't run today. It was tough to run on DJ Reader and company. But the line stepped up in games where Mahomes didn't have his mobility and, you know, gave him that little extra time to get this second-class group of receivers, basically, open.
Yeah, they didn't have much rushing success, but Pacheco made a bunch of big plays, usually after the catch. But, like, he got given the ball a bunch of times where it looked like he had nowhere to go, and that dude just runs differently to other running backs.
He does.
He runs – I think I've said this before in the podcast, but, like, when you play – at a really lower level, you can see the guys that just play with a different level of physicality and intensity. He does that in the NFL. Like, he runs with a level of violence and reckless abandon that most other running backs don't have. And it pays off. Like, there are plays where he hits a guy and you're like, that play should be over right here. And just through sheer determination and refusal to go down, he just keeps fighting through it and ends up getting yards after contact and broken tackles and first downs where they shouldn't exist.
Are you ready for the biggest Sunday in sports, Sam?
Sure.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57. They get all the Super Bowl action you need because new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get on the Super Bowl 57 excitement with DraftKings Happy Hour Super Boosts. Wow, this is great. Check the DraftKings Sportsbook app every day from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, check it every day, 6 to 9 Eastern, to see what prop bet will be boosted. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code PFF. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with the code PFF. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void in Ohio. See show notes for details. You're voided here in Ohio. What else about this game just stood out to you? I love the back and forth battle. It's quite the rivalry. I mean, there's a point in there where I was talking about Cincinnati from a long-term perspective. They chuck it up to Higgins. Burrow chucks it up to Higgins on third and long. And I'm just thinking, how long do the Bengals want to just keep that trio together? Because when you talk about competing with the Chiefs and the Bills, right? Let's not forget the Bills just because they lost last week, right? They're still going to be up there. How long do you want to keep Burrow, Chase, and Higgins together? And can you legitimately put half your salary cap into three players and build around it? It's going to be tough to do because Higgins is going to command wide receiver one money. So, just what I was thinking during the game. Because that's why Burrow is so cool too, man. He knows he's got these dudes that he can throw it to when they need to.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a thing that they have to reckon with pretty soon. T. Higgins had that thing of being talked about as a number one receiver, but there was always the question of how much of it was being manufactured by having Ja'Marr Chase on the other side. Then we got to see what it looked like when Ja'Marr Chase wasn't there for a few games, and it looked exactly like everybody had been saying. Like, he is a number one caliber guy, and then when you put Chase back in the lineup, it just works even better because Chase is still the guy getting the double teams and the extra attention, which only frees up T. Higgins to generally be one-on-one as much as possible. So collectively, it is a fantastic trio. And then when you have a guy like Tyler Boyd in the slot as well, it's even better. But at some point, that starts to cost a lot of money because once those guys get onto that second contract, it is tying down a ton of cash into those players. That being said, if you're going to start off, like if you started from scratch, you know, a roster with all of the cap space and zero money and zero players, you could argue that the first three players you'd want to tie down are your quarterback, your number one receiver, and maybe your number two receiver if he's that good. Like if he's a 1A, that might be where you want to throw the three biggest contracts that you have, you know, all things being equal.
Yeah, then the juggling of the rest of the roster.
Yes.
After that, you know, if you have Burrow locked up long term, you can move money around. I mean, if you have all of them locked up, you can move money around and kind of make it work.
But this is what the Chiefs have been dealing with already. This is what the Bills are dealing with now that they've paid Josh Allen. Like, at some point, this is just the reality of it. Is once the quarterback in particular is on that second contract, you can't have everything. You're going to have to juggle and make sacrifices somewhere and, you know, cut guys that you would rather keep, but you have to figure out somewhere to give the money in addition to the quarterback.
That's why the Chiefs, you know, this was supposed to be their transition year and they were supposed to be better next year.
Right.
They gave up Tyreek Hill to maybe take a step back so that they could say, hey, next year with Trent McDuffie and Sky Moore and George Karlaftis all getting better and some of the other players that we got. But here they are in the Super Bowl. And Travis Kelce, I don't know if we're going to try to play that clip or whatever.
Yes, we have to, because this is the most important outcome of this game, is that the team with more bulletin board material won the game.
I was right, man. This is the one time I was right all year. I said the team with the most chips on the shoulder, the team with more bulletin board material. And by the end of the week, the Chiefs had a bigger bulletin board, man.
So at Burrowhead Stadium, what happened? Well, Travis Kelce can tell you, assuming we have this clip.
Okay, you know, we couldn't hear it, but it sounded like he combined. I think he started with a woo.
Yeah.
And he ended with the rock, Jabroni. I think he called the mayor a Jabroni or something.
But I think you could see
You combined two of the greatest wrestling promos of all time. You started with Ric Flair and finished with the rock. That is top notch by Travis Kelce.
Yes, and also the quote, Burrowhead my ass, should probably wind up in a t-shirt somewhere.
I'm sure that's going to be a t-shirt. We don't make t-shirts anymore, but
it's true. But they sort of vindicated that, right? They clearly, that did, I think, piss the Chiefs off during the course of the week. There was plenty of bulletin board material, and they end up getting the win, and now they can rub it in all the way through the week.
It was just a great back and forth game, though, buddy. I mean, the Chiefs came out firing, right? I mean, we mentioned that first quarter, the game wasn't won in the first quarter, but you know, we see all those key plays in the fourth quarter. If the Chiefs don't get up to that early lead, 13-3, dominating, go for that fourth down where Mahomes rolls out and finds Kelce, which was just a great play, right? Kelce runs a corner route, and Mahomes adjusts off of it. We've seen them try to run that play before, basically like back shouldering a corner. And that was the play. That was the play where they used to get Tyreek Hill open all the time, right?
Yeah.
You just roll him out, and you cannot stop Tyreek Hill sprinting to the flat. It's impossible. I mean, those are just showing all the different ways that the Chiefs are able to evolve offensively. So we'll have plenty to talk about with the Chiefs-Eagles game, but it gives two more weeks for Mahomes to heal. I mean, I don't know if we'll see any side effects with the injury. I don't think he got hurt that much. He does have that. He does limp a lot during games.
It's not going to be worse than it was in this game. It
shouldn't be.
You know?
So we'll have the Chiefs. We'll see what happens with all their receivers, but they'll be closer to full strength. I think Jalen Hurts, he's been hurt and banged up, a little bit off. Hopefully he's at full strength and we get a really good game.
Yeah, I mean, I think this game should be pretty spectacular. The other thing that was interesting in this one is, so as much as we gave Kansas City credit for going for it on 4th-and-1 earlier in the game, getting a touchdown off it, they also punted the ball on 4th-and-8, 2.5 minutes left, which felt like that might be the last time they would touch the ball. Like, they punted it away. Now, look, 4th-and-8 is not exactly the easiest thing in the world to convert. You're in a tough spot at that point anyway, right? The Bengals had a decision on the penalty, right? They could accept it and put them at 3rd-and-22 or something.
It was a holding penalty. So, so it was 3rd-and-12 or whatever it was. And Mahomes flips it, almost gets sacked. He flips it for a 4-yard gain.
Yeah.
So the Bengals, with 2.5 minutes left, had to choose between 4th-and-8, just out of field goal range.
Right.
Or 3rd-and-22.
Yes.
And they initially took the 3rd-and-22. And it didn't seem crazy to say, okay, 3rd-and-22, you give up 10 or something on 3rd-and-22, and you're still in a better spot, ultimately. But Zach Taylor did not want to take that chance. That's what I'm saying. I think he's making the right moves, right? He was saying, I think they're going to punt on 4th-and-8. If they go for it, they go for it. I'll give them that option. I think they're going to punt on 4th-and-8. We get the ball in Joe Burrow's hands, full field to go. Let's trust them and go. And all they got one first down and then got sacked and had to punt it back. But, yeah, there was a chance. That was it for the Chiefs. And that would have been
That
would have been like the Andy Reid game management thing that comes up where it's like Andy always makes one of these big mistakes. And he made a couple, you know, challenge mistakes and stuff in this.
And it would have been a 54-yard field goal, I think, which is, I mean, we're in a world of, now look, it's outside, it's
Jay Feely was on the sideline.
Back to Arrowhead Stadium now. In the cold.
Jay Feely was on the sideline saying that's out of his... They had Harrison Butker's range.
Uh-huh. I'm just saying, a 54-yard field goal these days is pretty, you know, reasonably conservative. Like, there's plenty of kickers out here attempting 60-plus yarders on a regular basis. Now, they're not doing it in January in Arrowhead Stadium necessarily, but if I had a kicker and he couldn't make 54 for distance, I wouldn't be that thrilled, you know? So anyway, they like to go, they punted away on 4th and 8 rather than attempt to go for it. But it did feel like that might be the last time the Chiefs offense sees the football. Like 2.5 minutes, Joe Burrow, late in the game, Tom Brady type of magic. This is what he's been doing. And they did, they started off that drive, you know, they convert on a big 3rd and 16. And then Chris Jones took over.
Yeah, that was it. I think the don't have the game film, obviously, just yet. It looked like the Chiefs were doing what they could to take to just give T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase the focus. Because, like, the second down play was to Trent Irwin in one-on-one coverage, not creating any separation. They get to 3rd and long. And like I said, Chris Jones, you move him out wide against Hakeem Adeniji. Had been rushing Jones from the interior, basically dominating Max Sharping for much of the game, the starting guard. This time you move him out to right tackle and he gets it. Chris Jones didn't have any playoff sacks until today. I didn't know that. I mean, we know he's had games. Super Bowl a couple years ago, I think he had like 10 pressures. Like,
well, he's been to 5 straight AFC championship games.
Yeah, like, they play a lot of games.
He's played in quite a lot of playoff games.
But, you know, Burrow broke free from a Chris Jones sack or two last year. But we know he's had games with like 9 and 10 pressures, and then Frank Clark's the cleanup guy all the time. And Frank Clark's like legendary playoff sack artist or whatever. But Chris Jones has always been the most disruptive player on that team, and he was again.
Just an update for your earlier question. The Empire State Building has, in fact, lit up in Chiefs colors. So the Eagles only got like an hour, you know, 3 hours worth of
so it's like an American show. Building, not a...
Well, it's just red now.
So the Empire State Building is the Rob Lowe?
Yeah.
Of
pretty much.
Of buildings.
Yeah.
Just
whatever one.
It's rooting for the Shield.
Right.
Just here for the Shield. Just wearing my Shield hat.
Just like the officials.
It should just wear red, white, and blue for America and the Shield.
Yeah.
That's what it should be lit up as. I thought they just had the Jets colors fired up. I'm like, here you go, Eagles. We got your
probably
green and white. So Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. They won.
Well, certainly, apparently now you can make the argument that he's better than Joe Burrow. However difficult it might have been to make had they lost this game, you know? If this coin flip of a game had gone the other way and Burrow had won, it was impossible to make the argument that Mahomes is better, even though he played the entire game with his hobbled ankle and blah, blah, blah. But now that he's won because somebody shoved him in the back going out of bounds, we can make the argument that he is the better quarterback.
Again. One of the rare games where the team with more rushing yards actually lost as well.
Wow.
Bengals finished with 71 rushing yards, including 30 from Burrow, mostly on the, I think all on scrambles, including a really nice...
Well, you
got
to be over 100. I mean, if you don't even get to 100 rushing yards...
Well, that's why the Bengals couldn't win.
It doesn't mean
anything. That's why they couldn't win. The Bengals, look, there are injuries on both sides. We talked about the Chiefs getting depleted. The Bengals losing Alex Kappa, Lyle Collins. I mean, just losing 3 out of their 5 starters. Didn't notice it last week against Buffalo, but certainly did.
How much, just as an over-under, how much drink do you think has been involved in the chat? Some of these questions that are being fired at us? There's one guy in there particularly who I would hope, for his own sake, is hammered out of his gourd at this point. Because if you're of the persuasion that cuss words and whatnot are not of your liking, I would click the fast forward 30-second button for here. But I will read you this man's or person's message. Quote, yeah, how the fuck do these motherless pieces of shit not mention the blatantly missed holding call on a Mahomes run? End quote.
That's a good point. It's a good question.
I'm just over under how many drinks you think that person has had. I don't know if it's a guy. I can't make out his
at least 11 drinks.
11. Over. Tyler
over
says.
11 billion.
Yeah.
What are these vanilla ESPN type questions? Oh, they don't like your questions in the chat here, Sam.
My questions? I was just asking how much drink
I mean,
you had.
Tyler. They don't like Tyler's questions.
According to him, or according to this person, male or female, I can't tell. He's not drunk. He doesn't drink. Well, he, she, it, whatever.
He's just off, you know, just excited or upset. Yeah, I didn't actually see the holding call. I saw the late hit. I didn't see the holding, but I saw Pete Prisco tweeting about it. He would never lie. He said it was a hold. It should have been offsetting. That would have put us at a do-over.
A do-over again.
Which, you know,
yeah,
we do sometimes.
We do apparently now, yeah.
It is brutal when the game's so close, and that's what it comes down to at the end.
Yeah, but that, so there were some weird officiating calls in this game. Like, obviously, the do-over is the most egregious thing. But they actually got a lot right. I mean, the pass interference for the hit, the Burrow interception, I think was legit. You needed replay, really, to slow it down and see, but that was absolutely legit. I think the one on Hilton was legit as well. Like, they were debating how much of a turn you needed to see, but you can see that it's twisting, I think, MVS around. Like, he can't contort to the left to catch the ball because there's a hand on his right hip that's pulling him in the opposite direction. I think that's pass interference. The play to Eli Apple off the back of that do-over that bailed him out. Off the back of the do-over, they sack Mahomes, but it doesn't count because Eli Apple had his hands all over the receiver. That was legit as well. Like, there were a lot of good calls.
You just didn't think it was going to happen after they stopped him on 3rd and 9, right? We talked about makeup calls, and it's like,
right,
oh, maybe we let that little tug go on this 3rd and 9 but that we just screwed him over on. Anyway.
But I think you can absolutely I don't know that this was the worst officiated game in the world, particularly given the standards set by the NFL.
Impressed with Mahomes down the stretch again. He had a couple bad plays in there. One was a turnover, had a dropped interception, but then in crunch time, running for the first down. I mean, it was like he was just saving, you know, the touchdown to Valdez-Scantling, absolute laser beam, right? It was like he just knew how to take it easy, take what was there. But when he needed to step up, and we mentioned this on the pregame show, just like become a star, right? Just be a star for a couple plays. He did it on a couple throws, and he did it on that 3rd and 4 scramble that ended up becoming the late hit that led to the game-winning touchdown. Mm-hmm. So, congrats to the Chiefs and Chiefs fans. Dr. Eric Eager, the late one. I got his mug.
You did. Yeah. They also they broke out another quote-unquote rugby play that set the rugby into the NFL movement back another year. Travis Kelce, it was legit sort of hook and ladder. Travis Kelce caught it and then tried to pitch it outside to a guy that was open. Like, it was a play that was on, but like just missed the throw with this like one-handed lateral thing, which a simple two-handed rugby pass would have got there easily. And then I think they faked it a couple of plays later. I couldn't tell if it was a fake or if it's like an option that Kelce has.
Yeah, he might just always have
right,
that
baked to take it when he sees it. But either way, he sort of almost made it to do it, to get the guy behind him heading in that direction, then pulled it back himself and carried on. But like it's clearly a play that will work if players can simply execute a really short, easy rugby pass.
Man, that was part of the Chiefs' first 15 plays. That was part of their script. Their script is always fascinating. You had like a real screen, you had a jet screen, you had a hook and ladder. They always have everything just to see what you're doing there. So pretty good.
The only thing I will say, so I think whichever one of these teams made the Super Bowl, it would be a good Super Bowl. I do think that given what we have just seen happen to the Bengals' offensive line against Kansas City, Cincinnati's offensive line going up against Philadelphia's defensive front in the Super Bowl would have been brutal.
Yeah, we're looking at one of the best offensive lines, one of the best defensive lines, at
now,
least
maybe
the
at
Chiefs
that point,
Eagles.
Yeah, maybe at that point they get back, you know, a couple of the guys that have been down. But if they had been dealt with the kind of players that they were stuck with in this game, it would have been pretty tough.
Yep. I thought if the Niners didn't have their quarterback injuries, I thought we were going to look at two really good games. We only got it in the AFC game. Let's go to the NFC. Start of the day. Do you have anything else on Bengals Chiefs? Does anybody have any questions in the chat? Is there anything that we forgot to cover besides the fact that the NFL's rigged and it's against your favorite team?
Yes.
There we go. Somebody's just saying rigged as I said.
Jeffrey. Yeah.
Jeffrey says rigged. The NFL's rigged. We don't know which way it's rigged, but it is. And like last year it was rigged against the Chiefs. This year it's for the Chiefs. It's different every year.
Yeah.
The Eagles are getting all the calls this year. They're winning. Who's the NFL rigged against?
Whoever lost.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Glad we got that going. All right. Eagles dynasty talk. That's what Ryan wants. The Eagles with a dominant performance. 31-7 over the San Francisco 49ers, of course. The story here is Brock Purdy gets injured. You have Hassan Reddick beating Tyler Kroft on a pass block. Not great.
Well, for some reason, they kept trying to block Hassan Reddick with tight ends early in the game. And every time they did...
Didn't work.
No. Every time they did, he made something happen.
Yeah. So Purdy gets his arm hit. It was very similar to the Josh Allen thing. You go back to throw. It was a fumble, by the way. Ball was out of his hand. You get hit. Your elbow goes forward. It goes back. I mean, that's where you tear ligaments.
When you watch the slow-mo of that play, particularly from, the behind him angle, the sort of rapid-fire sequence of what happened to his arm just looked brutal. First of all, it gets hit like this and bends back sort of back and behind him. And then it gets fired forwards. And then it finishes by his hand cracking off, I think, Reddick's helmet on the follow-through. So in the space of half a second, his arm goes from whatever the reverse of hyperextension is going back that way.
It's just external rotation.
To being fired forward and then cracked his hand into a dude's helmet.
Was the hand part of the issue too? Or did they no, said I think it was just the elbow.
But the hand, hand hitting helmet is the type of thing that can put a quarterback out of a game just on its own. And that was the third worst thing that happened to his hand in that play.
I mean, when Purdy finally went back into the game, Josh Johnson comes in, he gets knocked out with a concussion. When Purdy went back into the game, everybody's like, well, if he can't, at least throw one down the field, take a shot. And I'm in pain thinking about it. If he's in enough pain to not play in the NFC Championship, it hurts.
Yes.
Right? It hurts, or he tore it. It could be he needs Tommy John. The ligament's torn or it's strained. And I've had elbow tendonitis and all that stuff. And I tried to, as soon as I got to AAA, my second game, elbow's killing me. And I tried to pitch through it. And that's why I tweeted out the stats to show everybody. I had a 9 ERA, tried to pitch through it in 08 in AAA. Granted, 9's not that much better than my normal ERA. But I tried to pitch through, and I had to get shut down for 6 weeks.
For your own safety.
With elbow tendonitis. You don't want to make it any worse. But every pitch hurt. You know what I mean? And I'm as Purdy's dropping back to throw, if he didn't throw a screen, I'm cringing. Plus, elbows affect your accuracy, right? It's the lever that affects your accuracy. I don't think he could have done anything beyond 5 yards.
I mean, that was just, it's just a sad thing to happen in a game of this magnitude. There's a lot of sort of, well, why didn't you just do this? They were screwed. I mean, you go to Josh Johnson. We were sort of talking about earlier in the season, it would be fascinating to see what Josh Johnson would do in this offense. Well, at least on this evidence, the answer is nothing like the same, which, is a point in favor of Brock Purdy's performance this year. If nothing else, they were having problems lining up. They couldn't get the play in on time. That kind of thing was going awry even before you get to what was happening during the game. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a fair sort of like-for-like evaluation. Brock Purdy's facing pretty bad defenses. And then Dallas, which did a pretty good job of slowing it down. And Josh Johnson goes out there against a team with a defensive front that's every bit as good as Dallas and a secondary that's better. This was as tough a test as he was going to get, so he probably should look worse. But that part was bad. Once Josh Johnson gets down, and so he gets sort of barreled over backwards, and his helmet does the head snapping into the turf thing that Tua did. And this is the flip side of the overabundance of caution for quarterbacks, right? Yeah. This idea of if you see a guy's head hit the ground in this way, which does have a pretty big indicator for concussions, he should be taken out of the game. And if he can pass a concussion test, then maybe we can talk about him coming back. I assume he didn't, which is why he didn't. But even if it turns out that he wasn't concussed, this is the sort of price you pay for caring about Tua's brain, right? If you've ever said anything about we need to protect Tua, that guy needs to be held back for his own safety, this is the flip side of that, which is you have to accept there will be games like this, and it can be in the championship game or a Super Bowl where a guy hits the turf and maybe he's not concussed, but it looks bad, so we take him out of the game for his own safety. That's, I think, part of that bargain, and I'm fine with that. But what it meant is all of a sudden the 49ers go from Brock Purdy's leading this team looking great to we don't have Purdy. Now we don't have Josh Johnson. Our choices are we put Purdy back in the game knowing he can't really throw, or we try and create an offense that involved Christian McCaffrey or Kyle Juszczyk as an emergency wildcat quarterback. And that's what everybody was clamoring for. The problem with that is, how many of those plays do you think you have in the playbook?
Oh, we saw everything, I think.
But that's what I mean.
Everything like, so, was like end around, reverse, like when they finally had to put Purdy back in.
But no, not the Purdy part. They're like, why don't you just run Wildcat with McCaffrey?
No,
like,
they had a couple direct snap plays.
How many Wildcat trick quarterback play? Like, you can't just like pull up the Arkansas offense with Darren McFadden, right? You can't just like pull that offense out of thin air and
Darren McFadden and
we're
Felix
just running
Jones.
This. Everyone knows those plays. Let's just run this, right? Like, you don't have that in the playbook. It doesn't exist. I'm sure you have a couple of plays here or there that you can go to, but you don't need a couple of plays. You need like an entire half of football running this. And so I think they're in an impossible situation at that point. And the closest thing I've seen to like a good suggestion is you give them the third quarterback back. But like, I mean, does that even help? They're fourth.
I mean, it's not going to make the game better, but I think you should. You should expand the roster so you don't ever have that situation.
Right.
Right.
But, like,
if player safety is the thing, right? If you're preaching player safety and you've created a world where a team's going to go into the game with two quarterbacks and they have to put the injured quarterback back in or choose a running back to play quarterback, that's not erring on the side of player safety. That's hoping that doesn't happen, basically. So give the automatic third quarterback. I mean, I said this too. If I got the Jets GM job 5 years ago, I already said.
Strangely, didn't happen.
It is. I mean, how hard could it be? I could be doing the same thing. Had I gotten the GM job, a GM job, I would carry four quarterbacks at all times. For the Purdy example, I mean, you never know when you're going to stumble into Brock Purdy and everything. And I get the reasons why you don't want to do that, right? And I would have to be persuaded in the building by people who are saying, well, if you give those two roster spots to quarterbacks, we can't develop them. They don't get any reps. Hmm. We need the, you know, fifth string linebacker to play special teams. We need more players to practice against, right? There are reasons to not bring an extra quarterback on your roster, right? There are incentives for the team to not carry three QBs and to maybe keep one on the practice squad or whatever. But the NFL can do two things. They can just allow you an extra roster spot, allow you to keep all 53 players active. I get why they don't do that too, by the way. Right, that's for betting and fantasy purposes. That's the moneymaker in the NFL, right? When you say receiver is inactive in this game, you know he's not playing. If you keep everybody active for all 53 players, the receiver that you know isn't going to play is going to be active, right? And he's going to go out there and you're going to put him on your fantasy team or you're going to bet the game a certain way and he's not going to play and that's going to screw things up. So I get why they do it, but they should do something for the quarterbacks, right? Keeping the extra quarterback available, giving the extra roster spot, whatever it might be, just so we don't run into this. And this doesn't happen often, but you still want to just be ready for it.
You're right. It's the difference between making a situation like utterly farcical, i.e. they were in an impossible situation of having to put either a hurt quarterback back in the game or running an offense that they literally don't have, with essentially a running back playing Wildcat with two or three plays in the playbook. Or you put out a terrible quarterback who can at least theoretically run an offense, the offense that you run. So I guess that is the better solution, but it's not going to help the game, which will be whoever the guy that would be fifth in their run of quarterbacks this season is on a depth chart going out there and playing in the NFC title game against Philadelphia.
I want to tell you about the easiest and most fun way to spice up the playoff football season. It's Underdog Fantasy in their Pick'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with a higher or lower total than that number in this week's game, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your Pick'em entry, get all your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. It's simple to get started. Just head to underdogfantasy.com or download the app. Sign up with promo code PFF. And Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. So, I want to give Philadelphia credit. I mean, they played well. The turning point in this game, though, so early on, we'll start at the beginning of this game.
Of course.
Early on, the Eagles go for it on 4th and 3. And this decision leads to their first touchdown.
Well, hang on. I want to take you back even further than that. I think the second play of the game, Fred Warner goes down with what looked like it could have been like a really bad shoulder injury, and maybe he's done for the game. He ends up coming back a couple of plays later. Maybe it was just a stinger. But immediately, you're sort of given this like shot across the bows of man, we spend all week like hyping up these games, two fantastic teams going up against each other. You're like, what if we just lose one of the most important game players of the game immediately, like right to injury, bam. Guy that you thought was going to be a pivotal person in this game just isn't there anymore. And you thought it was going to be Fred Warner. He comes back in the game, but then like a few plays later, it ends up being Brock Purdy. And it just sort of like, it's such a frustrating part of football that, you know, we spend all this time debating and analyzing and kind of talking through the various scenarios and what's going to happen. But it always is predicated with the starting assumption that everybody that is there is still going to be there as the game progresses. But inevitably, random ass injuries are going to take a couple of players from you. And the players that end up going down are like the most important part of any outcome. It's like, who are you losing? Tell me immediately who went down in the course of the game and when they went down, and I will tell you who won the game. Like, that's what you're dealing with here. And this, unfortunately, ended up being the most important position goes down early, and immediately the game's just different.
The game was completely different. The Niners defense, though, was playing tough.
I mean, because Fred Warner came in. Did a good job.
Both defenses. Though, right.
Like, the 49ers, obviously, at the point where you lose your quarterback, you're behind the eight ball, you're playing with one hand behind your back, and they blew some run plays in particular. But, yeah, they were going to make this difficult for Philadelphia.
So Fred Warner goes down. He comes back in, but it's 4th-and-3 on this drive. The Eagles go for it. It wasn't one of those situations where people always go for it, right? I mean, it was on the edge. It was fringe. Field goal, punt territory. They go for it on 4th-and-3. Jalen Hurts rolls out, throws it up to Devontae Smith, who catches it. Catches it.
Kyle Shanahan said after the game that he didn't challenge this fourth down catch because there was no immediate replay showing that it was incomplete. As true as that may have been, and they definitely took their time getting to a replay that showed how obvious it was that he didn't catch this, it feels like you could take your cue from the receiver that supposedly caught it, getting up and immediately signaling, like, hurry up, snap it, snap it. Like, I've never seen a guy so obviously, like, telegraphing that there's something wrong with this play. When the guy that supposedly caught it himself is the one, like, hustling everybody to the line, maybe you just take a chance that there's something there.
Yeah, you don't need to go to the booth. So there's two things here, right? The receiver, Devontae Smith, in that case, is maybe giving you a hint.
I mean, a friend of mine
texted
me.
I would also say there are receivers I've seen catch the ball and do that before too. And I do. I mean, if you're instinctual enough, like, can you, in the middle of a game, make a catch, know it's like a little bang bang, know that you caught it, and almost try to like induce flag from somebody? I know it's not human nature. It's difficult to practice that.
I've seen receivers get up and be like, you know, let's go. I haven't seen a receiver get up and be that like insistent that, hey, quick. A friend of mine texted me and said, I've never seen a receiver like so convinced that he didn't catch the ball before. the tricky thing for Shanahan, though, is like at that point, not only are you relying on the fact that that's a signal, which I think it pretty clearly is, but you're then relying on the idea that replay has found it somewhere. Because the problem would be like it is a drop or it does come out, it comes loose. Devontae Smith is clearly showing you that. So you throw the flag, and then we spend 5 minutes looking through replays, and none of them show it. Even if it happened, it's just you don't get the angle, right? His body's in the way. You don't get the clear view, which you need to overturn it. That would have been the issue. But I still think, like, given how adamant he was, take a chance. Throw the flag.
I love that the NFL has gone to, what's the official term? Sky Judge or Call New York or what did I say it was? After discussion. Quote, after discussion.
Yeah.
Right? Like somebody called me.
Phone a friend?
Yeah. After discussion. I love after discussion. After discussion's the MVP of the NFL playoffs.
Isn't, though, like, the fact that
which means we just got video evidence. I mean, in the Bengals game, they challenged a play. And then the ref comes up, he's like, actually, we're going to flip it right. After discussion, we're going to flip the play. Save your challenge flag. I love that. Save every challenge flag and just get them right.
Isn't, though, that so indicative of how the NFL treats this whole officiating thing, which is there a single like sports league in the world with more opaque officiating than the NFL who tries to hide any form of transparency with what they're doing to the point where instead of saying there is a sky judge here doing this, we just sort of make believe like after discussion on the field, we've decided that why don't you say New York phoned in and said this is the call? Who would hate that?
The The problem is maybe not the transparency there, but I think the inconsistency. The fact that the Bengals had a challenge flag, which they needed to throw, which would have gotten overturned, right? They would have won the challenge. But we saw, right, Andy Reid won one challenge, lost the other one, and loses both because that's one of the dumbest – I mean, the NFL has a lot of dumb rules. One of the dumbest rules is if you're 50% on your challenges, you lose both. But if you're 100%, you get a third one. Yeah. Like, just get your challenge back if you get it right.
Yes.
It's wrong in the first place because somebody screwed up. But the fact that the Bengals can have a challenge flag pulled to get the play right, good, good win. And the Niners just, like, didn't get the after discussion call. They didn't get the replay in time back in New York.
It's such an NFL thing that we have to, like, create this sort of facade of, no, the officials just work things out on the field. As opposed to, like, we got a call from New York that said, here's a replay we didn't see, so we're going to flip the decision. Like, just say it. Just explain what's happening. Don't, like, dress it up in this facade of, actually, we nailed every call live on the field. Did you say the sky judge buzzed down and said, this is the call? That's what happened. Like, put some transparency on it, and then maybe every dumbass call you have wouldn't have a million people going, rigged! The NFL's rigged against my team! They say that because of this ridiculous cloak you put in front of all the officiating. It's absurd.
It's like the Wizard of Oz. It's the Wizard of Oz. Somebody pull back the curtain behind the wizard. Okay, so that was a big thing. My favorite one was the punt that hit the wire.
Yes, but you couldn't find it on the tape, so we just have to assume it didn't happen.
So the wire that's holding a camera.
Yeah.
If you just watch the video on the camera that's being held by a wire, there's no evidence on there? There's no evidence.
Well, maybe they got really good shockproofing on those things.
Really?
Yeah.
Just
you don't know. Also, is that
like that would work on my shaky hand?
Is that conclusive proof? Conclusive visual evidence.
Does this count as conclusive proof? Because if you're saying human nature counts, right? Yeah. If Devontae Smith's human nature counts, I drop the ball, I run a play.
Wouldn't count.
The human nature is the Eagles got on the sideline going like this, looking and flinching and pointing.
And all of them going,
it hit something.
Right. And then spending 5 minutes looking for tape and going, I mean, I can't see it.
Was a bird, though? Could it have been a bird?
Was it a bird?
Could have been a wire. Could have been
like
a bird.
Randy Johnson? Just exploding feathers coming out of the sky.
What a shot that was by Randy Johnson.
Hmm.
Looks like the Eagles are starting as 1.5-point favorites here. I think the money's going to keep it on Kansas City. They'll be favorites by the time it rolls around in 2 weeks here.
Yeah.
But the Niners were hanging tough. And I got ahead of myself. I got a little excited by the Christian McCaffrey play. He had a couple receptions for first downs and then an incredible run. So you've got this Niners team. They're down 7. At one point, 4 or 5 drives in, that was all the Niners gave up for points, was one drive where the Eagles went for it on 4th and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Their biggest play was an incompletion. And their biggest play of the game was the incompletion to Devontae Smith that they called a completion.
Right.
For 29 yards.
Like,
so the Niners are hanging tough, and Christian McCaffrey goes beast mode on a touchdown to tie it up at 7. And now it's like, okay, maybe the Niners can hang tough because they got all these playmakers. Josh Johnson, just don't screw it up. And then he screwed it up.
Right. I mean, remember, the play that put Philadelphia in front essentially shouldn't have stood, and you could say Shanahan probably should have tossed the flag just from the reaction. The play where Brock Purdy went down ends up being a fumble. Like, it looked like a dropped interception at the start. The ball comes out, T.J. Edwards is under it, can't come up with the pick, drops it, and then Linval Joseph ends up falling on it, picking it up, and they end up reviewing it, calling it a fumble, and all of a sudden Philadelphia is set up again, like at midfield somewhere, but they go 3 and out. Like, San Francisco's defense holds. So they were doing a really good job. They had this game close, but eventually, like, the fact that they just didn't have an offense caused them. And what really, I think, screwed them was right before halftime, right, where they get the ball.
It's 14-7. You had a minute 30, maybe?
You had
They picked up a first down.
Yeah, minute 36. And then they get the first down. And that's minute 36, Josh Johnson is your quarterback. You're like, your own 25. Like, I don't know how aggressive you want to be here. And was it Greg Olson on this one? They were sort of saying, well, the way this normally works is you run the first play, you get the first down, now let's go. Now let's start moving, because now we've gone somewhere. We actually have a shot at this. So they do. They get the first play. Debo Samuel picks up 11 yards. Now we're at the 36, fresh set of downs, a minute and 20, and they're in the shotgun now. And it's not like the only bad thing that happened is Josh Johnson, the guy that's been in the NFL or bouncing around leagues for like a decade plus, just straight drops the shotgun snap. Like, inexplicable. Doesn't, like, just one in, I don't know how many, like 1,000, 10,000. I don't know how many snaps the guy's had fired at him and then drops it. And you're like, that's not, you know, people were complaining that Kyle Shanahan took a quarterback like Josh Johnson and let him pass from empty. And you're like, that, well, okay, but the thing that went wrong is the guy dropped a shotgun snap. Like, that's not something you can legislate for. That, why would he expect that to happen? So that ends up turning the ball over, and then Philadelphia gets a touchdown right in front of the half instead of potentially San Francisco driving for what could have been, you know, a close game.
Yeah, that was the difference in the game, right? You're down 7. You have to play that. I mean, you can't just take a knee there. And look, Shanahan's been on both sides of that, right? In the Super Bowl, he took a knee because he was afraid to go for it and give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. He was probably too conservative in a game where you got to be aggressive because Mahomes will eventually get his points.
You certainly can't do it once they get the first down. Like, if they had, 136 left in your own 25, if they'd simply kneeled it out from then or ran the ball into the teeth of the defense 3 times or whatever,
yeah,
maybe. But they did what you're supposed to do. They ran the play. They got a first down. They go, okay, let's go. And something completely inexplicable and unpredictable and, you know, something you can't have been expected to bargain for happens. And all of a sudden, what could have been cutting a 7-point lead into who knows, right? Or minimum going into the halftime down 7 without your quarterback turns into now you're down 14 and the game's probably gone.
Yeah, so Miles Sanders had already run for 2 touchdowns to that point. Josh Johnson drops the snap. Eagles recover. Boston Scott, your boy, comes back with a 10-yard touchdown run. I thought the Niners, it was interesting. Like, the Niners had some plays where they did a really nice job against the run. I thought there were parts of the Niners' game plan that was really good. I thought they did a great job keeping Jalen Hurts in the pocket for the most part. It looked like Hurts a lot of the time was dropping his eyes and trying to escape, and every escape route in the pocket wasn't there. But that's where the penalties showed up again too, right? I mean, there was a lot of plays where the Niners would at least 2 third downs that got third down stops that got negated by penalty, where the Eagles converted because of a defensive hold or something that was happening down the field. I thought the Niners did a good job on that. I thought they did a decent job on Hurts' scrambles. But then there were just some runs, like Javon Kinlaw, former first-round pick, just getting mauled by double teams up front. There were just a few runs where the Eagles
won
up front, dominated, and that was like your 13-yard touchdown by Miles Sanders, your 10-yard run by Boston Scott. There was a few of those runs in there where the Eagles' offensive line just took over.
I mean, the Eagles' offensive line generally this season just deserves a huge amount of credit, and in this game, they were dominant again. Lane Johnson is out there playing with like a torn adductor or something that's going to require surgery in the offseason. He's going back very early in the game. It looked like Nick Bosa was going to sort of see what he had, you know, and very early, I think he bull rushed him and took him right back into Jalen Hurts. You know, like, uh-oh, this could be an issue. Like, if he was sort of feeling out the waters to see what Lane Johnson had, and that was his first indication, Bosa would have been feeling pretty good about himself. But that was basically it. Like, Lane Johnson cleaned it up after that one play, probably helped by the fact that Bosa was almost taken out by a freak like leg whip on a punt play when he was just standing on the sideline minding his own business.
Yeah, McCaffrey was dealing with a calf. Like, yeah.
Right.
But every good 49er had some sort of issue today.
But this, like, Nick Bosa potentially causing all kinds of problems and exposing Lane Johnson didn't happen. Lane Johnson ended up sort of bottling him up, holding down that right side of the line again. Him doing what he's doing, dealing with injury, is pretty insane. The offensive line generally playing as well as it did. I mean, it crushed that 49ers defense on a few plays. Just can't say enough good things about that offensive line across this year. And now, you know, Philadelphia is going to the Super Bowl with arguably the best defense and offensive line in the NFL. Defensive line and offensive line.
Yeah, it's going to be a great matchup. I think no matter which way it went, if, you know, healthy Niners or if the Bengals pull that off, it's a great matchup. To your point, though, if it was the Eagles' pass rush against the Bengals' offensive line, look, it was a close game last year, Rams and Bengals, with that type of mismatch. Aaron Donald and company going up against the Bengals' O-line. But that would have been a pretty bad one. Bad mismatch.
Yeah, two things about that, though. One, the Rams' defensive front was very much more a one-man show than the depth that the Eagles have. And number two, that effectively cost the Bengals the game.
It did.
The last drive.
It did. But Hassan Reddick was fantastic. Again, Javon Hargrave, he's hitting free agency. Just to reiterate what the Eagles have done, right? Javon Hargrave, who has been one of the best interior pass rushers the last 3 years, he's one of our top free agents coming up. James Bradbury at corner, one of our top free agents coming up. The Eagles paid a lot of money for Javon Hargrave a couple years ago, but they paid almost nothing for James Bradbury. I just like reiterating the good moves that the Eagles made. It is just an excellent all-around roster. And the fact that, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's one of the more coveted free agents coming up. It's a weak free agent class, but it all seems like they're Eagles who they've gotten a ton of production out of for limited, you know, money or draft capital as it went in the CJ, the Gardner-Johnson deal. So the Eagles are good, is what I'm trying to say. Mm. And they showed it today, even though the Niners had no chance. They were overmatched. I thought they hung tough. Like, the 31 points is not indicative of the Niners' defense.
No.
In this one.
No.
If there are concerns for the Eagles, I don't think the offense, like the pass offense, wasn't great in this one. It wasn't. There was a couple deep ball attempts. There was a complete miss. AJ Brown had a step. Hurts overthrew him. There was a couple contested catches that, you know, the Niners made good plays on, but the offense wasn't great. I know it's the Niners' defense, but the offense wasn't great really for the Eagles, despite the 31 points. A lot of short fields. That's what leads to 31 points. Right. You don't just look at the points and say it was the offense.
And by the way, the other thing about that punt that hit the wire and then they couldn't find it so it stood is, if the punt hit the wire, it would have negated the penalty on the play as well, so it would have been a huge swing in field position if they got a do-over on that because the ball hit the wire. It takes away the penalty on the play, which didn't happen because the play didn't happen, so that would have been a swing of like 30 yards in field position.
Oh man, the people are highlighting the missed hold by Orlando Brown on that last play.
Yeah. People are highlighting a lot of things. One of the problems is a lot of people don't actually know the rules. So you hear a lot of things being asked for penalty. Like, here's an obvious penalty. Or like, what if you read the rules? Like, there's a specific carve out for some things like that. Like, people are also looking for a block in the back on, you know, the gunner when he's splitting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not, these aren't necessarily illegal.
So game flow wise, Brock Purdy gets hurt, elbow injury. He's out for the game. Josh Johnson comes in. There's a couple good plays in there, but it's mostly not great. They're unable to move the ball a whole lot. He gets hurt. He gets knocked out of the game. There was a point where Christian McCaffrey's testing out both helmets. He's got a quarterback helmet and his regular helmet. Didn't know if he was going to be the QB. Purdy comes in. We still don't know the exact report on Purdy, but it's, you know, it's somewhere in between this elbow injury that would probably keep him throwing for a couple weeks to all the way to Tommy John. Who knows?
Right.
If it's the elbow that I assume it is, and he didn't throw anything besides a screen pass. It was a whole bunch of creative handoffs to Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey and screen passes, and the Niners pretty much had no chance at that point.
The one thing I will say, so I think generally the 49ers defense did a fine job. I think they blew some plays. They got overpowered by that offensive line. The thing, though, that really did them in was penalties. Like, one thing that they did have control over and that they let cause problems was they had an absolute ton of penalties, and like legit penalties, not these sort of phantom, oh, the officials are rigging this game. Like, they had a bunch of legit penalties that were extending Eagles drives.
I mean,
they
roughing the kicker.
Yeah, and they were extending drives on critical downs and keeping the Eagles with the ball and moving. You know, those were drives. Again, it probably wouldn't have mattered because the 49ers didn't have a quarterback, but it didn't help that the 49ers defense was kind of blowing those critical plays.
So it was one of the weirdest NFC championship, just championship games you'll see, right? It wasn't all that competitive. We were trying to figure out who the quarterback was. Brock Purdy had a perfect completion percentage. Finished 4 for 4 for 23 yards, right? So you get that. Jimmy Garoppolo won the NFC championship with 6 completions 2 years ago. Should have been enough.
Did have a fumble, though.
Did have a fumble in there. Shows up in EPA. It shows up in non-completion percentage stats. But, yeah, it's unfortunate we were kind of robbed of getting to see that. Running backs can't really take over games a whole lot. But McCaffrey tried, man.
Yeah.
That was it was impressive seeing him go, seeing, hey, Super Bowl's on the line. let's try to do it. He just ran through three Eagles on that 23-yard run. He's running with power. Like, he's running over people more than I ever remember. It's not just shiftiness and quickness. Running over people.
He had a great game.
He did. And he's fun to watch and all that stuff. But, you know, there was a couple calls to revise our thoughts on the McCaffrey trade, which, by the way, I don't even think we specifically trashed the trade. I think our analysis was very much like, here's both sides of it. You're giving up a lot of draft picks to go get Christian McCaffrey and then pay him a lot of money over the next couple of years. That's inherently risky, but it made this offense really, really good down the stretch.
I mean, we also said that, yeah, like, it's very interesting and should be instructive that Kyle Shanahan, of all people, keeps going after this upgrade at running back. And theoretically, McCaffrey in this offense should be able to do something fantastic. Now, the problem was, or where we sort of said, well, the other side of this is, but how much have they given up both in contract terms and in draft pick terms to make this happen? And that, I think, is still very much up for debate about whether it's been worth it. Like, yes, the offense has been... The problem is trying to pin down the sort of cause factors in the 49ers offense this year has been very difficult because the sort of before and after Purdy numbers, right? The before and after McCaffrey numbers, the before, like, there's three.
They're
like,
all good.
Yeah, but there's multiple different things. It's like, so which one do you give all the credit to? Or do we just say all of them? This one gets 100% of it. There's 452% of credit being dished out to these things, right? So that's the thing. It's like, is McCaffrey worth what you're tied up with in him in draft picks and capital for what's going to have to happen in the future with McCaffrey on the roster? And I think it's arguable. I mean, the offense was great with him there, but it probably would have been great anyway because they also have George Kittle and Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and Kyle Juszczyk and a good offensive line. And apparently when Brock Purdy came in, he added something to the offense on top of Jimmy Garoppolo. So sure, McCaffrey's great when he's there, but does that make it worth it? Which was the question we asked at the time. I think it's still a valid question.
Yeah, and what would have made it worth it, right? Like last year when we talked about the risky move that the Rams made with Von Miller. When you say risky, it just means that there are outcomes at both extremes. One of the outcomes could be you win a Super Bowl and you're happy that you had Von Miller on your team. That happened. But even though that happened, there are consequences to that, which you missed two pretty significant day two picks, and the next year you're missing depth and your team's beat up. So there's risk with all these things. There's going to be risk when the Niners try to rebuild and they're missing some draft picks here.
And this is why, like, it's always such a silly, like, evaluation to look at this just in terms of, well, they won, therefore it was the right move, right? The Rams, their all-in was correct because they won and nothing else matters. Okay, but, like, Christian McCaffrey had a great game here, but because his quarterbacks got hurt, all of them, they didn't win the game. Maybe the 49ers win a championship this year if any of their quarterbacks stay healthy, right? And then you go, well, they won, so it was the right move.
It's always worth it.
So nothing McCaffrey did changes, but because of two more important players or one more important player getting hurt, it changes the entire narrative on what we think about whether that was a good move or not. Like, that to me is just not sound fundamental way of thinking about this. Was Von Miller a good move because the Rams won a Super Bowl, or was it a good move just to increase your odds or to take the chances anyway? I think that was a perfectly defendable move just because of process. But I don't think it changes one way or the other based off them winning the championship. Same with the Stafford thing, really. Like, it was either a good move or it wasn't. The fact that it actually ended up getting a ring is dependent on a dude catching a pass in the end zone.
I think you can be results-based a little bit with that, but you have to put out there what your goal is, right? Just like some teams might have the goal of championship or bust, other teams are going to be like, I just want to be in the playoffs every year. I just want to be competitive. The Rams move worked because they were saying championship or bust, right? I mean, it worked because it honestly, it depends
right. But if
on
Aaron
your...
Donald, if Aaron Donald fails to make one of the plays
at
the end of the game,
I get it.
The Bengals win, did it still work?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it worked just by getting to the NFC Championship because if it's championship or bust, but the goal was we got to elevate this team and give us a better chance to win, right? Like the soft goal was give us a chance to win a championship. The hard goal is win the championship, right? They hit the soft goal by giving themselves a better chance that Goff didn't allow, and then they hit the real goal, which was win a championship. Like, you'd be happy with that move. The problem is, like, you can't just say definitively this was good or bad. Like, most things in life aren't just this is good, this is bad, right? When it comes to trades, So anyway, we'll have plenty to talk about McCaffrey and the Niners. We're over 1,000 people in the chat, though, so we appreciate it. I don't want to leave.
And yet, only 117 likes.
Oh, man. We should have over 1,000 likes right now. Hit that thumbs up.
It should be at least 1-for-1, if not 3-for-1.
I don't want to hear about the NFL being rigged. Like, it's okay then that the refs...
This is not the weekend for you.
The refs are just bad. Like, it's okay that they just don't get everything right. Hamlin. There's some things that they do get right. Like, they say... The NFL that was trying to rig this game against the Bengals saved them a challenge by going to the Sky Judge and saying, hey...
They were also, by the way, a week ago trying to rig it for the Bills. Like, did they change who they want? And what happened?
Yeah.
That has changed? Hanlon's razor. Never attribute to malice that which can adequately be explained by stupidity. That is the NFL officiating in a nutshell.
Refs
it's
are
bad.
Stupid.
It's incompetent. Like almost every other officiating in every sport in the world, the reason it's a problem at the NFL level is because they're so opaque about it, it looks suspect. Other sports are way more transparent, and so you see the incompetence happening. You're like, oh, I see what happened there. The guy's an idiot. That's perfectly, it's easy. I can appreciate that. That's fine.
If I could defend the refs for a second, though.
No.
It's a tough job, man.
It's a gift. Oh, there's like six of them. How hard can it be? You got one thing to look at, one of them is a clock ticking in front of your face.
I mean, that takes time to go down. You get the flag.
Stop
it. You gotta throw the flag. Why is the play clock sitting at zero? Well, it takes time to read the clock, find my flag, and throw it.
This is a group of people that collectively couldn't see a ball hit a wire.
Nobody's looking for the wire.
Nobody's looking for the
wire. I blame New York, who has the camera on a wire, and the camera didn't shake. It's that good?
No, I'm sorry. Stop trying to defend the refs. The refs are bad, but they're incompetent. They're not crooked.
I'm just impressed when they get something right. Like that pass interference, they got it right. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Bang, bang play. They got it right. We get the benefit of replay.
Here's the thing, though.
Replay.
Every sport in the world, as far as I can tell, officiating is terrible. Yeah. But most other sports go out of their way to try and create a level of transparency so that you can see the reason these shitty decisions are happening is because we're just not great at this.
Yeah.
It's not
just really
because we're rigging the system against you. Like, if I'm not going off on a rant about this, but like why people hate VAR, right? Because it's opaque. It's behind the curtain. You just see this video and then somebody draws some lines on it. You go, nope, no goal. What? Well, I can see it's a goal. They created this level of shadiness around it all. And now everybody's going, oh, well, it's rigged. Their VAR's rigged. It's crooked. This is absurd. No, it's just incompetent. It's a bad system. So it looks bad. But when you hide the reasoning, that's when people start going crazy.
Oh, man. Be more transparent, NFL.
Yes.
And stop letting players push the man with the ball. End it.
No, I'm okay with that.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I don't quite understand people's problem with that.
The runner should earn it. Like, there was a whole thing. Like, wasn't that illegal in college when Reggie Bush did it?
It's illegal to, yes. But it's always been illegal in college. But okay, why?
Because
what?
Earn it yourself.
How are you earning it yourself if there's five 300-pound guys paving the way for you?
The block should be in front, not behind.
Why?
Because
what? What is the difference? What is the difference between five guys?
Where does it stop?
Where does it stop?
Yeah, just push a guy all the way up the field.
Yes. If you can't stop that should be a perfectly valid way of scoring.
It's called rugby, which is stupid compared to football.
It's the same. It started off as the same sport.
Yeah, and we made it better.
Made it a better sport. Okay, but...
Let us know in the chat, which is a better sport, rugby or football?
The people keep sort of saying they should ban it because it's too effective. That's just, okay, so stop it. Like, you can't just ban a play just because it works too well.
That's why they
added ban screenplays?
That's why they added the illegal contact back in there. We're like, oh, contact's too effective. Make it illegal. We want more offense.
Yeah, but we want more offense, so this works.
We like this. What we really want, yeah. Rodgers sitting there in his office in New York, which is like, what we really need.
Rodgers is a huge fan of
Bill. What's it called again? Ball. We need more malls. You know what we need in the NFL? There's more malls. That's going to bring the people in.
Rodgers is a big fan of double G.
Yeah, definitely need more malls for sure. Enough of that nonsense. Ban it this offseason. You know, Belichick's going to put it on the ballot, the coaches' meetings. Like, enough of this. Enough of this double cheek push stuff.
I don't see what people's problem with it is.
Six Nations next weekend. We'll be there watching it.
Yeah, we can find a place.
Or in 2 weeks. No, next week.
No, 2 weeks.
Two weekends, two Saturdays from now.
I think it starts next week, though.
Yeah, that's what they're saying in the chat, Six Nations. It's going to be great. You can just watch people push people all the way up the field. No pass game whatsoever.
Yeah, starts next week. But that's Ireland-Wales. We don't care as much about that. The following week.
Wales is a sneaky underdog this year.
Yeah, the following week, though, is Ireland-France. That's the one we want to see.
How's the Ireland team looking? They were young and developmental two years ago, so they should be good now.
They're very good now. They're number one in the world.
It's amazing. They're better than the All-Blacks.
Where's your where do you stand on some people? Some people want to outlaw the song Flower of Scotland before the game.
I think they have a point.
Yeah? Why?
Because they probably think it's racist or something. And they're going to cancel it.
Not so much racist.
Points
but the entire
to a darker
song,
time.
The entire song.
Points to a darker time that we don't want to highlight here in 2023.
The entire song is about defeating the English at battle.
Oh. Maybe you want to run that. We have all sorts. We have a whole array of songs. We could combine them all.
Your national anthem is effectively that as well.
Yeah, good for us. You celebrate your victories.
In song form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every 4th of July, we're like, hey.
It is, by the way, also objectively one of the best anthems in the world. Like, it should be used all the time, everywhere.
I'll have to listen to it after. Would you ban it?
No, God, no.
Okay. Let's keep it going.
Look, if you can offset.
Who's saying that they want to ban it?
Yeah, it's people. There's always people.
They're idiots.
But if you can't, I don't know how long it was for Scotland, but Ireland is 800 years of oppression. If you can't offset 800 years of oppression with every time you rock up to our gaff, we get to play a song about the one time we actually beat you, that feels, at the least you can do is suffer through that, frankly.
I'd say go for it.
Yeah.
All right, chat. Ask any questions, football related, not rugby related, and we'll go out on that. Let us know. What do you want us to talk about to finish up? Those were the two games. Programming notes. We have no idea how many shows we're going to be doing this week, but we'll see. I'm going to Disney World.
It's supposed to be five, but that leaves me doing a lot without you.
Seth's going to be in town. We've got our Senior Bowl guys. I'm telling you, we got to do some remote hits from the Senior Bowl, get some Senior Bowl breakdowns. We got to get that stuff on here. I'm going in reverse order where most people win the Super Bowl, go to Disney World. I'm going to go this week. I'm going Disney World this week.
The
kids are already down there. They hopped in the minivan with my wife. They drove down already.
How many hours is that?
12, 13? Huh. It's like nothing because we do this all the time. Go to Boston all the time.
You guys are insane.
Yeah, crazy. Well, I didn't make the trip. Mother-in-law. Yeah. Well, I have to drive back. But they're all at Disney World having a great time. I'm going to join them tomorrow. All right? And then we're going to go to the Super Bowl next week. We're going to fly out first thing Monday morning. We're there all week, Radio Row. So you'll get your normal Super Bowl week Monday show. And then we're going to be all over the place. We'll have guests. Let us know if there's any special guests you want us to find at the Super Bowl.
We have potentially a huge guest showing up. I'm not going to drop names just in case we get hosed by a no-show.
By a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hall of Famer, Hawking Tequila.
That narrows it down.
He's theoretically going to be showing up to the show.
Who ironically averaged probably what the...
Don't bring that up, sorry, man.
Averaged a lot of Super Bowls.
Yeah, averaged a lot of Super Bowls.
I won't mention your...
No, I wouldn't, I wouldn't highlight that.
He still wants to sell the tequila, so he'll be there.
Plus, it's topical, right? In this venue.
Tequila?
No, the Phoenix.
Oh. Cardinals legend.
There would be an in, is what I'm saying. Yeah, if you wanted to bring it up. It's like, hey, last time you were in Phoenix.
let us know. Who are the guests you want us to find for the show? And, we'll have some fun out there at the Super Bowl. But I'm going to be off the rest of the week here.
There's some, going to Disney. There's some not great questions coming in, to be honest.
Johnny Sexton is too old, J-Mac says.
No.
John Sexton's my old teammate, UMass Lowell Baseball.
Johnny Sexton's playing his best rugby right now.
John Sexton just got named head coach, Central Catholic High School.
Joseph Robert would like to know, who would you rather snuggle, Mahomes or Hurts?
I have no answer to that.
RK would like to know, how tall is Stroud, really? I assume he means CJ Stroud.
What's he, like 6'2"?
Isn't he listed like 6'3"?
Is he? He feels like he's 6'2".
He wasn't much taller than
Bryce Young.
Looks really short.
Shorter than Drew Brees.
Yes, and Kyler Murray, if you look at a picture.
Really?
There's a picture where he doesn't look taller than Kyler Murray.
Yeah, so Kyler's offset the height thing, but he's a crazy athlete. Bryce Young, somebody's going
to... wide.
Yeah.
Like for a guy, like he's...
There's nobody with Bryce Young's...
Build.
No, in the NFL.
Nobody.
It's like a cross between Kyler Murray and Kirk Cousins.
Well, it's like a slighter Drew Brees who can run. And what is that? because that's what we're kind of
talking
about.
He's shorter than Breeze, who's in his 40s, probably already shrinking a little bit.
He's also got the, like, he's got the sort of pumps on that probably gives him an inch.
Yeah.
How many tequilas can you do? Somebody asked. You could probably do a lot in your life.
No. So I don't drink anymore, first. Okay. And then secondly, when I drank, I did not drink tequila. Because the first time it was
difference?
Bad news. There was one time I drank a whole lot of it. And it was bad.
I don't think that would affect it like years later. I mean, it might make.
I'm just saying that became the thing that I never wanted to drink. Didn't want to smell it, taste it, wanted no part of tequila. So we're going to interview the guy selling tequila. I'm going to talk about how great it is.
What if he offers you something? You going to turn it down?
Yeah, I will.
Because I don't drink, but I'll drink. Somebody gives me a shot and puts it in front of me. I'm not going to say no.
I don't drink anymore. I'm out.
You're going to be that rude and disrespectful.
I'm out on
Hall of Famer. You're going to be like, I appreciate your offer, but no.
We'll see.
Because I'm.
It's a good question. Does Renner still work here?
That is a good question. Legend. I believe so.
For now.
Everything I know says he does.
Well, this guy said Renner was arrested, according to his sources.
I mean, that wouldn't shock me.
The last time Renner disappeared, he showed up on a reality TV show.
He did. Yeah.
I don't think that's what he's doing right now.
No. Somebody else said he's on his fourth vacation, which also sounds entirely plausible.
Renner does take a lot of vacations, usually not at this time of year, though. No, he's out at the Shrine Game right now.
Drake Holiday asks, bigger deal, Young's height or Kenny Pickett's hand size?
I think Young's height now, because Pickett has solved the hand size.
Solved it, or just proved solved. It was proved irrelevant.
That it was okay, just like Jared Goff proved. It was a Joe Burrow, small 9-inch hand guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Or did he creep over 9?
I think he might have got to 9.25, wasn't it?
I mean, a 9-inch hand guy hasn't made a Super Bowl
maybe it was
a
just
year.
9. But anyway, it's true. Yeah, I mean, Young, I don't think it's a problem, but he's going to need to prove that because he may end up being unique in terms of a guy that size.
Yeah, I'm interested in the Bryce Young discourse because arm talent – What I don't like is when the short guy gets knocked for arm strength, like Baker Mayfield did. Kyler never ran into this stuff because Kyler, you always saw laser for an arm and crazy speed.
Yeah.
People forgot about Kyler Murray's height pretty quickly because everything else was special. I think people will understand that Bryce Young has a really good arm, but I could see somebody randomly being like, arm's not that good. He's too small.
But it felt like we'd sort of move past the height thing for quarterbacks with – obviously, you know, Drew Brees being as good as he was for as long as he was, Baker Mayfield coming in and being successful early, Kyler Murray looking great sort of from pillar to post and being the number one overall pick. Also, obviously, Baker being the number one overall pick, all these kinds of things. And now we're just sort of going to go back to going, well, Bryce Young's too small. I mean, okay, but is he? Like, look at his negatives on tape and tell me where the size is a problem because there really aren't many. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at some point, you have to look at it and say, again, I was making this argument at the time. Like, he didn't wake up yesterday at this size. He's been this size the whole way. Like, he understands how to play at this size. Now, does it change a little bit going from Alabama and the SEC to the NFL? Sure, but this is not, you know, a seismic change we're asking of a guy here.
I will say, though, the Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson, three of the short quarterbacks of recent time, have struggled in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Right? There are limitations there.
Correct.
So you might say, hey, they've lived with it their entire life. Fine. But NFL teams know how to, you know, accentuate your weaknesses defensively. And if there's no middle of the field to attack, I'm not saying there will be with Bryce Young. I'm just saying other short quarterbacks have had that issue in recent years.
Yes. I certainly the Russell Wilson developments, I guess, in recent years will be, I think, creating that concern again. But I mean, Russ showed for quite a number of years that he can work around that. Like, that's the thing. It's not that height is not a thing. Like, you, with your 6'10" listed size, whatever you actually are, if I stand behind you, I need to go quite a way back before I can see past you, right? It's just a fact of physics. Of course, it's a thing that a guy standing 5'10" in height is going to have problems seeing over a bunch of guys that stand 6'5". But it doesn't mean that he can't function. Like, again, he's been doing that the whole time. So he's going to find a way around it to make some plays. If he doesn't succeed in the NFL, it's not because, oh, man, he's too short. He just can't function at this level. It's because he just wasn't good enough.
Somebody mentions Breeze was good in the middle of the field. I get it. He was so good at everything. You know, Breeze was so accurate perfectly on time. I feel like the elites probably shouldn't be in comparisons as much as possible. You know, they're usually the exceptions to the rule.
But they kind of have to be when you're talking about a guy that's going to go number one overall.
I mean, if you're asking Bryce Young, can he be as good as Drew Brees, or at least overcome things like Drew Brees? I mean, I guess that's fair, but Brees is like one of not many.
Yeah, but this is like, it's the same argument again. Like, so are these guys.
Like, Brees did have the style, the crane neck technique, like somebody said. He had the style where he was, you know,
he was always upright,
right?
Full over the top,
right? Thing. He knew, like, he was playing.
He maximized his height every inch
as much as possible.
But like the guys like Kyler Murray or Bryce Young, like these guys are already one of one. You know what I mean? Because guys that for 5'10" don't make it that far. If you're making it that far and you're being talked about as a number one overall pick, height's probably not an issue.
There was a question in the chat: best Super Bowl positional matchup. That feels obvious right off the bat. Eagles O-line, I would say. I mean, sorry, Chiefs O-line versus the Eagles D-line. Hmm. The Chiefs offensive line, which I think has been just fantastic these last few weeks. We know that the time that the Chiefs lost in the Super Bowl, they got hurt and got demolished.
Hmm.
But the Chiefs O-line, that's been fantastic in pass protection against this Eagles D-line that had, 17 more sacks than any other team and can get after it from all angles.
Yeah, I could buy that.
I didn't make up that question. Somebody... Eli told me. Someone in the chat asked when you're going to shave your head again. See, that's me making up a question. Just made that up.
I shaved it on Saturday.
You didn't even have to answer.
Son, so, you know, I can't go longer than a week. It's reached the point now, I'm in this sort of problematic no man's land of when you're totally cue ball bald, it doesn't look great generally, you know? It's all shiny and stuff. There's some problems there. But it's patchy enough now where I can't let it go much further than this, or it's like it sort of looks like a lawn coming up badly. You know what I mean?
So we're really going
to keep it within a week, is what I'm saying.
You do it once a week,
at least.
That's so often.
Has to be within a week.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah, a lot.
All right. So we were talking about my hairline last week. So I'm watching YouTube and I get this ad thrown at me. It's one of those like extended, long ads. It wasn't. It was like 4 minutes of an ad. I listened to the whole thing. And there's some carbonated shampoo that's basically like cleans out the pores of your hair to help it grow.
Help the hair grow again.
Is that right? Is that the right thing? I wrote down the name of it.
You did?
Because it was, yeah. And I've done this before. I've been enticed by like this ridiculous sounding YouTube ad.
Yeah.
Get out of here with the zoom in here. Can we move back, please? Cameraman, back up. 151 new photos from Disney World I guess I have to look through. Listen, I've been suckered in before. I'm like, wow, this thing sounds amazing. And then I look it up and like all the reviews are like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This doesn't work. Do you think, I got to go find the name of it. Do you think the carbonated shampoo will help? So it elicits hair growth. It just allows, because if you just only have like one hair per follicle, whatever the thing is, like, you're done.
Yeah.
Right? And you got to keep flexibility in your scalp. And it claimed that it was...
Okay, I will give you...
Is this too good for TV? Is this too good to be true TV type stuff?
I will give you, obviously, the starting caveat being that I'm not a doctor. I'm simply related to doctors.
Ask your dad.
I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I did 2 A-levels in science, and then I decided science sucked, and I went in a different direction, right? But I will give you a rule of thumb that I believe is a sound basis to live life by.
Yeah.
If the thing they're trying to sell you is talking up charcoal or carbon, it's bullshit.
Okay.
So the magic properties of charcoal or carbon, other than starting a fire, they'll be good for you for that. But if it's for like, you know, toothpaste, I've seen charcoal infused toothpaste that's supposed to whiten your teeth. Bullshit. Charcoal infused shampoo to fix your hair, make it not bald. Probably bullshit.
Okay. Man, I got my hopes up. Yeah.
I mean, look, give it a roll. See what happens.
What's the worst thing that could
happen? How bad could it be? You know?
We got some people, finasteride, is that the name of it? We have some people naming it, other people being like, don't do it, Steve. Billy Mays would be selling it if he was alive. Rest in peace, Billy.
Huh.
Like, the ShamWow's a pretty good product.
I mean, if they throw enough cash at him, I'm sure Peyton Manning will hawk it at you.
Peyton's embraced his look through the years.
No, I just mean he'll pretty much pitch
anything. He'll hawk anything. Yeah. That's right. Minoxidil, we got some great...
advice. Email us, NFLpodcast@pff.com, if you don't get into the chat.
He's fourth a fourth-year medical student. Also not a doctor, by the way, technically.
No.
He Edwin, will be one, but he isn't now.
Future Dr. Mendoza in here.
Yeah.
Well, no. Yeah. 5-alpha blocker. Don't use that. Okay, don't do that. Stop laughing at me. Well, I usually fast forward the ads, but this one,
it just suckered you right in.
Oh, they suckered me.
Yeah.
There's like what an art to those things, right? Because you have to skip them after 5 seconds. So yeah. You have to have some hook in 5 seconds. Like, have you ever wanted to make $1 million? Yes, I have wanted to make $1 million. I've got 23 more minutes to find out how.
You ever considered you're just an easy mark?
Potentially.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's advertising mastery as opposed to just.
Nah, this is an outlier. I don't usually. Well, anyway, we can only have these discussions between us. A lot of fun discussions between us. We appreciate everybody joining us live in the chat. Is there anything else we want to talk to? Yes, we got to go talk to a doctor. They do have side effects. Never know.
Yeah, we need to end the show.
We got minoxidil people, though, pushing it.
Sure.
That might be the go-to.
Okay.
Well, also, that's not. I don't need it because my hairline's not receding.
They don't talk up carbon, as far as I'm aware. So that's
now, what if you had carbon minoxidil? Maybe we're getting somewhere here.
I think that's something different.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, anyway. What are we doing? Wrapping this thing up?
Yeah.
When are you going to be back? Probably Tuesday?
Tuesday with Seth.
Okay. So this is your Monday show, just showing up early.
We're going to be talking draft again. It's our draft show. We're going to move on to edge rushers this week, which means we'll build a perfect edge rusher, NFL players, college prospects. We'll talk a little bit about Will Anderson, who's been talked about as one of the top players in this draft since day one at Alabama. Talk about some other stuff, too.
Do you want to know what the model thinks so far?
Save it for the show.
I'll give you the production side of the model breakdown of Will Anderson for the show on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We thank everybody for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors. Appreciate everybody for being with us here. Championship weekend. We got a big week. And then we're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to have all sorts of fun stuff. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. Sam, we'll be back with you again on Tuesday. I'm off to Disney World tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.